Feeling lost and alone? Looking for validation from your partner, only to find the feeling of rejection and continued frustration? You're together yet so far apart. Now your frustration has turned into disdain and resentment. Your insecurities have begun to affect every aspect of your life. Ironically, you have now become the cold and detached one, shielding yourself from the uncertainties of your relationships. Dr. April Brown has created Bringing Intimacy Back, a series of discussions that are designed to help you reclaim what you have lost along the way. Dr. April will help you rediscover and reconnect to the intimate relationship your heart so desires. Go to www.bringingintimacyback.com today and let the healing begin.
Hey, welcome to the Bringing Intimacy Back show, where intimacy is real. On this show, we aim to help you increase the intimate connections between you, your significant other, children, family, relationships, and your higher power. We give you the secret power to intimacy, to create a life you love or love the life you create. Well, most of us are dealing with COVID-19, and so I also want to bring topics that relate to that. And today we're talking about collective grief during COVID-19, because many of us are experiencing so many different types of losses. So I was researched, and I was very, very blessed to find someone who specializes in this. And so I want to introduce you guys to Dr. Kylie Hanisch. Hi, Dr. Kylie.
Hi, Dr. April.
How are you doing today?
I'm good. I'm excited to be here.
Good. Well, let me tell you guys all about what she's about, what she does, and why she's coming on today to talk about it and to also provide us with some tools. Well, she's dedicated to helping people through transformational growth and healing after loss. She actually suffered from the stillbirth, a loss of her first child, Norbert. And because of that, she did co-create the Emmy-nominated film Return to Zero, which was a film about her life, to break the silence and to take away the stigma around pregnancy and infant loss for parents around the world. The film was a total success. Like I said, it was actually an Emmy-nominated film, and it received critical acclaim that led her to a nonprofit organization that she calls Return to Zero, Hope, where she's advocates for and guides bereaved family in reclaiming their purpose, meaning, and healing after such a tragic loss. So she now currently works with private clients to empower them to grow and heal through life's challenges and deals with a lot of grief issues. Yes, so I wanted to let you know about her background and what she does, and we're going to have a conversation about collective grief during COVID-19. Yes, thank you for being on the show.
No, thank you for having me.
Yes, definitely. So my first question to you is just kind of, I know I just explained your background in a very quick amount of seconds. Can you tell me about your journey to grief work?
Sure. My son Norbert was stillborn in 2005. So I had recently gotten married, gotten pregnant. I had a very uneventful pregnancy, and I was 35 weeks pregnant. I went into labor early. So for those of you not familiar with weeks of a pregnancy, so you're the normal gestational time period is 40 weeks. So I was about a month away from having a baby. I went into labor, and I learned that his heart had stopped beating. And we later learned that this was due to a liver cyst that had developed into the late third trimester. It was never detected. It burst, causing him to die. And I had a pretty horrendous experiences with the doctor in the hospital, you know, with the hospital staff, just really receiving no guidance on what was going to happen, what we were supposed to do. Just nothing. It was just kind of like thrown out to the lions, like, here, good luck. And I've learned so much since then that you can do to make this, even though it's a horrible traumatic experience, make it better and beautiful. But I did not respond very well. I just was like in shock. I was numb for 6 months. We did have a daughter who was born a little over a year later. Okay. But then I developed postpartum PTSD, which was undiagnosed and untreated. So I just was like constant panic attack, hypervigilant all the time. And for about 9 years, both of us just kind of, we were in survival mode, and the pain lessens with time, but it just like, we never dealt with it. We tried to see different therapists. But when people aren't trained in perinatal mental health and they don't understand perinatal loss, it's hard because they don't get the nuances of the experience. But then in 2014, so our loss was 2005. So 9 years later, my husband, he wrote, produced, directed the film Return to Zero. So he's a filmmaker, and as an artist.
Was he always a filmmaker?
He was always, yeah. Okay. And so he was a writer and director of different mediums, different film mediums. But, you know, he really felt this pull. Like, this is a story that needs to be told. There isn't anything out there visually on film about this experience. And so he wrote a script. He cast Minnie Driver to play the lead. He raised the money and made this as an independent film. So that was a kind of a whirlwind. But it was interesting, like in the making of the film and as the film was launched into the world, there was so many other bereaved parents around the world who just felt so validated in their own experience that like someone hears me, someone understands me. I'm not so alone and isolated, because that's what really happens in grief and trauma, is that you definitely are isolated. And so that came out. And then at the same time, I started hosting retreats for bereaved mothers who had experienced a pregnancy or infant loss. And I hadn't done my own healing work up to that point. I'd never been to a retreat. I've never hosted a retreat, but I felt called, like the idea came in the shower and I felt called, like, this is what I'm supposed to do. So I just did it. Knowing that, like, I wasn't necessarily the right person to be like talking like, I know everything, but I was chosen to hold the space so that higher powers could work through me and through my co-facilitators to reach these women. And the women need to be in community with each other. So that's kind of how things got started. But it was really like me being willing to be vulnerable and face my grief, where I didn't do for so long. I just shut it out because I didn't know what to do with it.
Right. So that community, you said that they needed to be in a community. That's what created the Return to Zero Hope. It's a community nonprofit organization.
Yeah. So after I'd been doing the retreats for about 4 years, I knew that I wanted more than just the retreats. And so I created the organization, for community around this specific type of loss, for education and awareness around it, both to bereaved parents and to health providers as well, because they don't receive training in their education around perinatal loss for the most part. And so they can't help parents unless they receive information on how to better support them.
Mm-hmm. And that's wonderful that you created that community, because many times people are isolated or feel isolated. And the same thing with this COVID-19, you know, people are feeling isolated about it. And today's topic is about collective grief. Can you tell us exactly what exactly does that mean?
Yeah, so looking at collective grief, it's like looking at our society is undergoing this extremely rapid and unwanted change. Mm-hmm. And there is This is like all of a sudden everything is disrupted. Our routines, our social structure, our economic structure. It's very disorienting. And it's like there's the certainty and familiarity is gone. There's a loss of human connection. There's a loss of safety. And so together, like, we are grieving the loss of all of these different types of things. And there's more losses than I just named, but it isn't like in some cases, if there's a natural disaster or a certain traumatic event that happens, it's usually isolated to a specific community or a geographic area. But in this case, COVID-19 is global and it's impacting everyone everywhere at the same time. And so I think we're all feeling these losses together, and it's a very strange time and hasn't really happened before like this, because we are so connected globally where we haven't been in the past.
Right. And it's in other events, like you talk about, it's like one country is doing something or this and that, and there's people that can help, but now we're all experiencing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's kind of helping each other through this whole process.
Yeah. And I think that when there's such uncertainty, we don't know what to do really. And I think that people out there are trying, we can all make suggestions, right? But there's right. such uncertainty. And what's something we all started out as, oh, this is a 2-week stay-at-home shutdown. Right. It'd be extended 2 more weeks. Now I'm in LA and we're still at stay at home through the end of July, and some places are opening up, but it's not temporary. It's kind of become like a new normal, but with a lot of fear and uncertainty, which makes us anxious, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead with what you were saying.
Oh, I was just going to also just say that the forced isolation from other people, I think that even though, like, I'm an introvert and mm-hmm. I like my alone time, I need to recharge. But when this is forced on us and we are not able to have that human in-person connection, I think we underestimate how powerful that is. And without that, like, there's a lot of loneliness, a lot of depression going on in addition to the anxiety over the uncertainty.
Right, definitely. And you know, this show, it's about intimacy, because we are born being connected to someone, you know, I mean, yes, in our mother wounds. And so when we don't have that connection, whether it's, of course, with our parents or spouse or friends or whatever, and I can understand, I'm an introvert myself, that it sometimes it is becomes very lonely.
Yeah.
Yeah, yes, yeah, in that aspect. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes total sense. You know, mm-hmm. we're physically isolating from each other. We're in a time of collective trauma and a lot of different types of losses going on. And I'm not even mentioning the losses of lives, which is a whole nother layer. It's like grief over death, which people are having to say goodbye to people in ways that are not normal, like that they aren't able to go and be with the person as they pass away and say their goodbyes. And that's not normal. So what is that doing to our, you know, our grieving rituals, like our grieving patterns? Like, we can't do things in the traditional way that we're used to doing them. And we're in a society that's really uncomfortable with death. And so mm-hmm. you're adding those things together. Just like, people just don't know what to make of it.
Right. And like you said earlier about a new norm, I mean, you know, it's a new norm for, you know, grief and funerals. Is that the Zoom thing? It's just, it's, yeah, yeah. And without, like you said, the closeness or the touch, it really makes things quite complicated.
Yeah. And the family members who are losing somebody, who can comfort them? Mm-hmm. You know, if no one can touch each other.
Right.
So it's really hard.
It is really hard. And it's, and I think for some of us who've experienced a lot of loss and stuff, it triggers other emotions. It triggers stuff from the past. And I know you're, have a nonprofit organization that, you know, focuses around the loss of children and stuff. So some of this is getting compounded on it because it's bringing stuff back. Because I hear from clients that they're grieving a husband that may have died 10 years ago. It's coming back. You know, I'm so alone now. I really do miss him, or whatever the case may be. Yes.
Absolutely. So it, you know, this trauma will resurface traumas because from the past, because it's like that you start feeling feelings that connect you to that past experience. And then the type of feeling is connected to that memory. And it, we don't ever fully process anything. It isn't like you process it and deal with it and it's over. And so it's like another layer maybe resurfacing and from that past trauma or loss. And what is it showing you that you maybe you need to look at right now? But it can be overwhelming when it's, you're going through this currently, and then it's triggering something from the one or more things from the past. And it, we don't know what to do with that. And then if we can't be with people in person, what are the tools that we're using to kind of calm our nervous system down, feel grounded, and receive the support we need?
Right, definitely. Well, we're going to take a short break, and then when we come back, we're going to talk about this process of dealing with emotions and feelings, and then later on get into the tools of how we can each individually use some of these tools to help us in the process of feeling. So we're going to take a short break right now, and then when we come back, we're going to get into the intimate conversation of collective grief.
During this difficult time that we are all facing, many people are in need of someone to talk to. One option is speaking to a therapist to express your anxieties if you're feeling isolated or just need someone that will listen and help you with coping skills to get through. Dr. April Brown is now accepting new clients and is working with her existing clients through distance video counseling. The services are through a secure online HIPAA web-based practice management platform called Simple Practice. This technology can provide a secure two-way interactive video counseling session over the internet. For more information about video counseling, please email Dr. April Brown at info@draprilbrown.com, or you may call 239-565-6921. Thank you. And remember, we are all in this together.
Welcome back to the Bringing Intimacy Show, where intimacy is real. And today we've been talking about collective grief in dealing with COVID-19. And we have a wonderful guest with us, Kylie. And Kylie is helping us talk about it and discuss about it. And so, Kylie, as we were just ending that conversation and we're moving now, many people don't even know when they're experiencing grief. How does that even look like?
Yeah, I think it can creep in on you a little bit and not know what's going on. And so I would say that there are multiple expressions of grief. That it's not just feeling sad that equals grief. It can be things like maybe you have looking at the physical symptoms, nausea, a headache. You have maybe the inability to sleep. You have insomnia, or maybe you're sleeping all the time. You're hungry a lot, or you're not hungry at all. So those are some of the physical symptoms. You could have looking at like your emotions and mental state. What's your ability to concentrate like? What's your ability to find joy in things and enjoy things that you're doing. It could be crying a lot. You know, I mean, there's a lot of different expressions of grief.
Of grief. Yeah. How do you know when it's healthy versus unhealthy?
I think that, first of all, right, as I mentioned, like we live in a culture that's pretty uncomfortable with grief and trauma and loss. And so we have the tendency when we have these uncomfortable feelings that are not normal for us on a daily basis, to push them aside and just say like, I don't want to feel it because it's uncomfortable. I'm going to put it over here. Like I'm going to lock it in this pretend room.
Okay.
And when we do that, it doesn't go away. It's there. Like you have to deal with it. And so in that case that you're pushing it away, it will come out in other ways. It'll come out in physical manifestations, sometimes getting sick or aches and things like that. Maybe, you know, like looking at, are you using alcohol or other substances to kind of numb that part of you?
Right.
It's too overwhelming. Are you numbing it? Are you able to function in your daily life? So are you taking care of your, like able to do basic, like feed yourself? Are you sleeping? Sleep is a huge indicator of how you're doing. I think we underestimate that. But I do think healthy grieving is allowing yourself to really feel what you're feeling and doing this without judgment, saying like, I'm feeling really crappy right now. This hurts. This is uncomfortable. I don't know what it is, but allowing yourself to really be in it and then being in it allows it to pass through a lot of the times, you know, like you have to allow it to be and you have to process it. And by talking to other people, I think doing this in isolation is not the key. Is like there has to be some share the burden of it so you feel less isolated. But really, if we aren't afraid of the big scary feelings, then it will allow for the grief to move through us rather than getting stuck. If you're locking it in a closet, it will get stuck and it will manifest in different ways.
Yeah, I noticed that sometimes it's manifested in people getting super angry, you know, verbally aggression or whatever. Yes. Yeah, so it's manifested where, like you said, the loneliness, you're so tired or you're just sleeping all the time. And people are, as you said, they're sometimes scared of that box, you know? And I'm curious, are there like long-term insight and short-term effects if you have this box of feelings and emotions and you're like, I'm just not going to deal with it. I'm just going to push through.
Well, I think the long-term effects of not dealing with your grief or trauma, like it will come out somehow. Okay. It's going to be different for other people. It's coming out in mental health, anxiety, depression, panic, that type of stuff. It could be coming out of as anger and irritability. It has an impact on your relationships with other people, whether it be your spouse, partner, your children, your family, friends. It could come out in physical ways that you like, as I mentioned, you could be getting sick all the time. You could have unexplained autoimmune diseases that pop up because I think that is an expression of just emotions that are not being dealt with.
Right, right. And I know from your story and from going on to your site that you do offer a variety of different services. And so for those people who have been listening and maybe they're like, you know, I've experienced this, I've experienced that, and I've gone for help, but I don't feel like I'm getting that help. How do you know when you're actually starting to work on what you need to work on?
I mean, I think in a support situation, whether it's a peer support group,
okay,
is an option, right? So like, I think in a peer support group, having the feeling of like, oh, I finally belong and they understand what I'm going through or have been through.
Okay.
And feeling like you can learn something from them, like people at different stages, how are they coping, that type of stuff. There's also like the professional support. Like, do you feel that you're getting help from the professional that you're seeing, a therapist, a counselor? And it's hard, I think, to find the right match sometimes. It sometimes takes a little bit of time of interviewing people. And if you're dealing with grief and trauma, making sure that that person really feels that they're an expert or a semi-expert in that. And if that's not their focus, then you need to find somebody else. Because I think in my own experience, if you're seeing someone that's not their expertise, it's not going to hurt you, but it may hurt you. Like, they may tell you things and you're like, you don't even understand what I've been through. And so in terms of making progress, like, are you, number one, letting some of those big feelings in and letting yourself kind of experience them and release them, like letting them move through you. And starting to make small changes. It's always with small changes, right? Like, it's not like you can change everything big all at once. It's like little things, but little tweaks in the way that you're doing things or the way that you see things. And I think someone helping you to have really compassion for yourself as you're, you know, to do this in a non-judging way, because we're so hard on ourselves, right? Mm-hmm. And that we're like not perfect and why am I dealing with this? And so it's like, okay, this is what I'm going through. Who can be kind of have your back as you enter this really scary space, and can they be a guide for you? And I think actually like that's one of the biggest thing in both aspects of support, whether it's a peer group support or a professional support, is like you need someone to be a guide in this, especially when it involves grief and trauma, to normalize what's going on and make you feel like you're not crazy. So I think sometimes we do feel like I'm going crazy. I'm all alone. I can't tell anyone what I'm thinking or feeling. And we need someone to say like, that's really normal. Mm-hmm. And yeah. That's totally fine for what you're going through. Normal, common.
Yes. Yeah. And you mentioned a valid point because we've been talking about opening up these feelings, and you mentioned a valid part about self-talk. You know, when we're starting to feel this stuff and we're talking about opening up the box and how it's okay. But sometimes we tell ourselves, you know, it's not okay. You should be strong enough to handle this. You know, why are you crying? These, you know, these thoughts, I call it self-talk, but these thoughts that are in our head sometimes can be a little bit of damaging to us. So we have to, like you said, give ourselves grace, and it's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So we're going to take a small break here. And in this small break, I kind of would like to hear from you exactly all your services, the things that you do. And then when we come back, we're going to talk about tools for people out there dealing with collective grief. All right. So Kelly, take it away.
Yeah. So what do I offer? I offer different types of services for different types of situations. So personally, I do one-on-one work with people going through traumatic events, grief and loss, and big life transitions to help them really process what's going on, normalize it, and help them understand what's common, what's not, help them to make meaning out of their loss experience, whether it's loss of a death loss or just a big change. It could be a marriage, a job, a move, just things falling apart and being thrown off, you know, making meaning, finding hope through that experience, and understanding that these can be opportunities for growth, but you can't do it alone. So So that's what I offer on a one-on-one level. And then for people dealing with the loss of a baby, whether it's during pregnancy or infancy or toddlerhood, through the nonprofit, we offer a lot of more education services and group support. So we have like a Facebook, a closed Facebook group focused on growth and healing after this type of loss. We do a virtual support group. We have a YouTube channel. We host retreats. Well, not at the moment, but when we can travel again. And we do education for health providers as well around perinatal loss. So kind of depends who you are and what you're looking for, but we offer a variety of services.
Okay, awesome. And they can reach you, Dr. Callie Hanash, and the website is Dr. Callie, her first name, K-I-L-E-Y, Hanash, her last name, H-A-N-I-S-H.com. And of course, the nonprofit that she's talking about, where the organization's called Return to Zero Hope. And that website is rtzhope.org. And we'll give out more of that information, of course, toward the end of the segment. If anyone who's out there listening and you have a question, please feel free to let us know, or you want to call in. Our number is 888-627-6008. Okay, so as we've been talking, we're now into our toolbox. And let's start with giving people tools on, if you're starting to experience some of these things, you cannot sleep, maybe you cannot eat, what are some tools to help people who are dealing with some of these events in their lives and they just don't know, you know, the box is open, they're starting to feel, what do I do next?
Yeah, so I would start by, you know, as you said, giving yourself grace. So acknowledge that this is happening. Acknowledge this is happening to me. Naming the feelings, maybe journaling. Because I think naming something decreases some of its power.
Mm.
If it's just something we're feeling and we don't even know what it is, it's like, oh, it's too much. But then if we say, like, I'm feeling afraid of whatever it is. I'm afraid that I have lost my job and I won't be able to pay my rent. Or I'm afraid that my parents are going to get sick and die. Whatever it is, trying to be really specific and doing this on a regular basis to just get it out of your head and your body onto something.
Exactly. And I'm glad you mentioned that part of naming it, because that's everything. I think people get so overwhelmed when they don't name it. But you said naming it actually gives you more power. Yes.
And I don't think you have to be aware of clinical terms either. Like using normal terms, like I'm afraid of this. I'm excited about this. I'm sad for this reason that I didn't get to participate in, you know, what, like my wedding got canceled or whatever it is. It's really just using everyday vocabulary to name what's going on. Okay. And then allowing yourself to have those feelings without judgment. So it's like, if you can name it and then allow yourself to experience those feelings.
Okay. So let me ask you a question. I know some people are saying, well, you know, other people have lost jobs and maybe have lost family members. Is it okay for me to grieve if I've lost a ceremony that I can't participate in my high school graduation, or should I not be?
Oh, absolutely. Right. I don't think it's fair to anyone to compare types of losses right now. It's not, not like, oh, my loss is worse than your loss. And yeah, one loss might be worse than someone else's loss, but it's all relative to you. It's individual, the way that you experience a loss. And so for one person, the loss of their graduation ceremony is going to be different than another person. And so really, however you're feeling is what you're feeling. And that's what you have to honor inside of you. Mm-hmm. And that there are a lot of different types of losses that range all the way from death being the worst, you know, all down. And it just, they're different. So yes, absolutely. The loss of attending, you know, for like high schoolers, you know, attending their prom, their graduation ceremony, people not being able to get married. You know, a lot of, I know IVF, people doing IVF treatments have had to stop that, and just like the uncertainty and not be able to engage in that, and different surgeries that may have been scheduled, just different things. Like, I know I like to plan. We all like to plan, right? We have our vision for the future, and everything has just been not only canceled, but you can't even plan anything. So the uncertainty of when can I do this again?
Okay. So once you honor it and you say, okay, it's okay, I'm feeling, you know, angry or upset because I lost maybe a job and I don't know what I'm going to do. What else? What should come next?
Well, I think there's two things simultaneously. So one thing is getting support. So this could look like a variety of things, whether it's, can I get support from a friend or a family member, just someone to talk to, right? So you're not isolated. It could be a peer support. I mean, right now that's going to be all virtual, but are there groups meeting on a virtual level that are talking about the type of grief that you're experiencing? So that's another thing. And so that could be, I mean, so many people are doing things virtually right now. It's a little bit overwhelming.
Right. Yes.
But can you find the specific issue that you're dealing with? So there could be that. There could be therapists who are hosting therapeutic support groups online. So it's maybe it's not specific to an issue, but then a therapist is like, I'm going to just run a group to support my patients who are dealing with losses from COVID, not just death, but anything. And then the support from a counselor, therapist, one-on-one, I think can be really helpful. Again, of that right now is a lot of virtual stuff, but that person can act as a guide to just hold space for you to grieve, to process. And then I think the other side of, you know, at the same time, you need to realize, in addition to your support, you know, or paying attention to what's my current support system like in this time? So who can I count on to talk to? What are things that are good in my life? What are positive things that are going well right now? What grounds me? What brings me joy? So it's kind of trying to instead of only focus on the negative loss part, focusing on the positive part. And not that you even have to be completely grateful. Like you can go the gratitude route, but some people are like, I just don't want to feel gratitude right now. But I think just again, naming it, bringing awareness to what things are going right. It's not all completely bad. Mm-hmm. And maybe that list could be short. It just depends, but it could be little things like, I'm grateful that it's a sunny day today. I'm grateful that I have fresh fruits and vegetables. I'm grateful that I slept last night, things like that. So, and then I was going to say meditation and focusing on the breath can be helpful as well. Meditation has been proven to really help regulate the mind and bring you into the present moment out of your racing mind.
Okay. Yeah. I'm going back to the part of getting support.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. No. Yeah. I was just thinking, that's really also good because like for some people, they may be grieving the loss of their kids not going to school, you know, because school's online now. Yes. And then that's just, and when you get support with other people who are experiencing the same thing, sometimes you get new ideas on how to cope with that loss.
So you don't feel alone. You feel like, oh, someone else understands what I'm going through, and people sharing ideas of, oh, this has helped me, and oh, I do this, then even if one idea can be helpful to you, it's one thing that you can change and incorporate. So yeah, right. For sure.
Right, right. And the other thing that I wanted to mention, because I'm glad you gave a couple of different ideas, is if you're trying to get support from a friend or a husband or whatever the case may be, and you're not getting that support, you shouldn't stop. You find someone else.
Yeah, and understanding that one person, like that your spouse isn't able to fulfill every role for you. And certain friends have certain strengths, and who can you count on? Like, who's the person that can be there for you to listen to? And they're not all gonna fill that role. But yeah, definitely, like, and also maybe you only need one person, but maybe it's the, you know, you sharing your loss and burdens isn't only put on one person too. It's spread out between different people. And like, can you have different people that are in your support network that kind of build that, mm-hmm. your holistic, I will say team, that sounds a little clinical, but who's in your system?
Is there a difference between telling your friend and your spouse or someone you know versus joining a support group and telling a stranger or a therapist? Do you find that there is any kind of benefits difference or any of that?
I think it depends, but I do think that like within a support group setting, you're going to have people who understand you maybe better than someone who hasn't been through what you've been through.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and yeah, and you get ideas for how to cope and manage what's going on. And then the therapist also, I would say, hopefully understands you, is kind of like a non-judgmental guide. And hopefully the therapist isn't trying to, you know, it's holding the space for you to process things and work through them. Whereas that's not the role of a family member or,
okay.
or friend, really, is to like, it's not their job to hold space as you process your grief.
Right, definitely. And I also want to go into more of this, like you said, meditation and breathing. And for many people, well, I think one good thing about COVID is that we've slowed down. You know, as a society, we have really slowed down, which is for some people, they feel uncomfortable just being still. So when we talk about meditation, they're like, oh my gosh, you know, I'm afraid to be still. Yes.
I mean, I would say that for beginning meditators, a good way to start is by listening to an app with guided meditations.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's instead of just sitting there and trying to focus only on your breath, and doing this by yourself can be pretty overwhelming. And so I know that like there's different apps. I mean, I use Insight Timer.
Okay.
And there's
okay.
Also, like Insight Timer. Headspace.
Okay. The Headspace and Calm is another one too.
And yeah. And so like there are apps that you can download on your phone, and there's different guided meditations. They're different lengths. There's different topics that they're on. One that I like a lot, a type of meditation, is yoga nidra, NIDRA. And so that is a body scan meditation. So it takes you through, and it's just very, very calming, like especially before you go to bed at night, that can be helpful. But there's all types of meditations. And I think if you listen to something guided, it helps you a little bit be more in the present. And sometimes in the guided meditations, there will be times where you're just focusing on your breath. They're all different, but I think that can be the app can be a teacher. And I think it's a nice way to just help your brain get out of the whirling that it can get into, or the fear and the worry that gets out of control.
Right. And tying the meditation with the yoga that you mentioned, it's making it mind, body, spirit, and soul. It's connecting.
Yeah.
Yeah, we haven't really kind of talked so much about the body, besides the lack of sleep and of course, for some people, not eating or eating too much. Yeah, but how important that is to when you're talking about grief is working through all aspects of it.
Yeah. And a lot of the times what I see, I mean, in myself, this happened, and then a lot of other people, when grief and trauma become stuck, it gets stuck in your body. Mm-hmm. And we use different, you know, different forms of movement, yoga, and we a dance form called Nia at our retreats to help move that grief and get it unstuck. As one of the ways we do that. I mean, we're very holistic in the way that we deal with it. I think that you have to be holistic when you're dealing with grief and trauma, is that it's not just an emotional thing. It's your body. It's your soul, spirit. Like that, like you start questioning everything, and sometimes you lose your faith and you don't know what you believe anymore. And so looking at that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And talking about faith, I know sometimes that, in the sense of meditation and prayer, sometimes we get so overwhelmed that we don't even know how to talk to our higher power, or we're just, like you said, stuck.
Yeah. Or you could become angry.
Angry, yes.
You're angry, like, why is this happening? And how could this happen to me? And what I thought was true is not true anymore. And yeah, the questions of faith and belief is very, very common.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, so you also mentioned with meditation, and I think you said it a few times, no judgment zone. Can you explain that a little bit more?
I think it's having grace and self-compassion for ourselves. For whatever is coming up, whether it's something resurfacing, something thoughts we're having, emotions we're feeling, whether it's from the present or the past, it's like really trying to treat yourself. Like the definition of self-compassion is like treating yourself the same way that you would treat a good friend. Mm-hmm. You can ask yourself, like, would I say this the way that you self-talk? Would I say this to my best friend?
Right.
And then you'd be like, I would never say that to anybody. And it's like, then you know what? You don't need to say it to yourself. Mm-hmm. But we're always hardest on ourselves. Always.
Right. Yeah. So another question I have, or that I know people out there may have, what if you're with someone and you see that they're in grief? What do you do? How do you support?
I think the biggest thing you can do is listen. Because I feel that when somebody experienced the death of a loved one, you know, that turns into a very internal experience, that they, on their mind, they're thinking about this person all the time, mm-hmm. but then outwardly they're having, you know, to pretend that they're strong, that they're okay, they're putting on a good face. And the other people, you know, in our circle, you know, are like, I don't want to bring that person up. It's going to upset them. In reality, they're already thinking about that person all the time. It's not going to upset them. They want to talk about the person who's died. They want to say or hear their name. And so, again, this is just part of our culture is like uncomfortable with death.
Right.
But knowing that you're not going to upset them, they're already upset. They're already thinking about this person. They're not trying to ignore it. We're trying to like make them ignore it, right? By not bringing it up. But being there to listen and to engage in the remembering part is important. And then I think also, depending on your relationship with this person, like, do they need help in remembering? Do they need help mm-hmm. in hosting? Like, do they need help in like finding a way to honor this person? Mm. Do they want to do a virtual memorial service and they need help with that? So
right.
Do they need a GoFundMe campaign? Maybe the friend could start that. Do they need, like maybe make like a scrapbook of that person's life? Like, could you help them with that? Could you help them with cleaning things out? Like if, like very tangible things to do. I know that we're a little bit limited, Mm-hmm. But can you do that wearing masks, both wearing right. masks and being together? Like, it depends, but I think that there's, you know, ways that a friend could give ideas and help this person process it a little bit in doing tangible things.
Right. And I agree with you. And that's, we're talking about grief. We've talked about, you know, there's a variety of forms of grief. And even talking with someone and they're grieving the loss of a graduation. So, you know, suggesting, hey, well, there's other ways that we can celebrate it, you know, yeah. versus the traditional, you know, auditorium and everybody's, you know, the pomp and stance of walking. But yeah, whether we do Zoom things, whether I know some people have been doing drive-bys. Yeah, just
yeah.
as a friend, offering different ways to honor.
Well, like, and for example, this is not a huge loss, but my son's 8th birthday is on Monday.
Okay.
And so for him, right, a kid and their birthday is a big deal.
Right.
And so, you know, we gave him different ideas and he planned something. He planned a drive-by birthday where okay. he, every half an hour, somebody's coming. We're going to get cupcakes and then he's going to have a 2-hour Minecraft game with his friends online after all the drive-bys. And, you know, yes. and just trying to, I mean, I know that that's not in the same category as really big losses, but for him,
but it
that's
is
a big
yeah,
thing.
Definitely.
And how can you support that child having a somewhat normal experience, even under the circumstances that we're under, to help him feel special and have, you know, whatever it is, rather than saying like, oh, it's your birthday and it's, right. it's stay at home. We can't do anything. I'm sorry. Right. What can we do? So mm-hmm. I think that there's ways to, I mean, so like that's a mother and a father to their son, but like as a friend, you can do that in different ways as well.
Right. And I'm glad you mentioned your son, because children process things a little different. So with all the losses that are coming around, that, you know, maybe, you know, it's the loss of school, but there are also hearing things. They're hearing, you know, the lost mom doesn't have her job. Just, yeah. How they're processing that, it's really important as parents to check in and yeah. to talk about it.
Yeah. And they're not, haven't seen their friends in 2 months.
Right.
And so they're just in the house, basically, and they're not going to the store. And it's a very strange time.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. And I know in our house that we have been playing more games and doing a lot of even online games with her and her friends. But it's really important to check in, because they're kind of looking at how we're processing this information.
Yeah.
And I do a lot of talks about resiliency. But yeah, it's how we're going to get through all this.
And I would say for kids, but also for ourselves, is limiting exposure to news for the kids, especially like not having the news on in the background for the kids. Limiting social media for you
mm-hmm.
also, like I think, and limiting news for yourself, like what do you
of
need
course,
to know?
Yes.
Like for me, I'm really sensitive and I in general don't watch the news, and so but now I know that there's things happening that I need to be aware of, so I'll ask someone, like, can you please tell me if there's something I need to know
right.
so that I'm aware. But otherwise, it just drags me down and I get overwhelmed and depressed. And I know myself, I'm too sensitive and I can't do that. And mm-hmm. so you have to figure out kind of how is it impacting you? Is it causing you a lot more fear than necessary? And maybe take a break, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, but for kids especially, but like protecting the kids.
Yes, I definitely agree with you. I limit the amount of news I watch, you know, and try to just read a little bit. And I strongly suggest people not watching the news before they go to bed, because it like impacts your sleep and stuff. Yes. Yeah. And also, as we've been talking about, it's important for us to recognize that there are some good things happening, that we will not be stuck like this forever. hope is really, really important.
Hope is important. And I think also I feel like in addition to slowing everything down, people have become like more kind to each other.
Right.
And, you know, and a lot of people are outside. Like there's so many people outside walking because that's like the only thing you can do is like walk into your neighborhood, at least where I am right now.
Yes.
And so it's just really understanding like we're all in this together and can I be kind, you know, and show love rather than being, you know, choosing the kindness and loving over anger and fear. Right. Really.
Right. And now just thinking about you being in LA, which LA always seems like a rush to me. Now we're able to slow it down because we have the time and to be patient.
Yeah. And there's like very little traffic, which is nice too.
Yes. Yes. Yes, definitely. Yes. I really would like to thank you so much for being on the show. Can you let the audience know again how we can contact you? Also, how we can maybe see the movie Return to Zero. Yes.
Okay. So the website for the nonprofit is rtzhope.org, and the movie Return to Zero can be found. I believe right now it's on iTunes and Amazon Prime. You can rent it on those two platforms. There's also a link on the Return to Zero Hope website for the film that you can read about it as well. And then my personal website is drkileyhanisch.com. So it's drkileyhanisch.com. And so you can email me like once you go to either of those sites and reach out.
Awesome. And you provide individual and support groups and retreats.
Yes.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. You're welcome back anytime. I really got a lot of good information about how to deal with collective grief, you know, and how we should, of course, name it, honor it, get support, you know, also meditate, breathe, you know, yes, and to touch in with a variety of different things. And of course, to be hopeful in this. Here. I wish you all the much success and be safe out there.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been an honor. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. This is the Bringing Intimacy Back show where intimacy is real. Thank you.